This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
DC for you. DC for you. DC for you. DC for you.
Wow, what a tremendous theme song effort by our own Todd Weber. Oh, speaking of which, this is Todd Weber, Place to Be Nation Pop. You are here and listening to DC for You, the only dedicated DC show. Every week we're talking about the best of DC Comics. DC Comics has something for everyone. I'm here joined by co-host Russell Sellers. Russell, how are you today?
Todd, I'm doing great, man. It's been a fun time listening to you give us that wonderful, wonderful rendition of Springsteen's Born to Run. I love it.
Well, you know, the subject matter here today lends itself to interpretations of Bruce Springsteen, and we're talking about, of course, The Flash. The Flash has had many incarnations since the golden age of comics, reaching all the way back to Jay Garrick, the first Flash. We had Barry Allen, the Silver Age Flash, and we could talk about the post-crisis Flash, Wally West. All of them have their strengths and differences. So to talk about these characters, their stories, the creators behind them, we have an all-star panel of our own.
Yes, we
do. Starting with the host of the longest running weekly
episodic comic book podcast
in all Place to Be Nation. But without Nick Duke, this is Greg Phillips. Greg, thanks for joining us here.
Thank you guys for that speedy intro. Yes, thanks for having me on the show. Boy, it has been a great summer, hasn't it? The months of July and August were fantastic.
Yeah, it was certainly a hot one, and you know, it wouldn't be, you know, a show like this unless we had tramps like us, because baby, they were born to run.
And absolutely,
that's why I'm happy to have Greg here on the show with us. Greg, you're making your DC for You debut here.
Indeed so. My partner got in on the action, and as you know, anything that Nick does, I have to do, and do not quite as well. So I am to do my effort towards that.
Well, we always appreciate it, and we got one more on this episode.
Something
we almost never do. We don't usually do two guests, but we felt like this topic was big enough to house two egos.
That's right, and we have invited our friend from great state of Nevada, former punch this in, Todd, of Marvel.com. It's Ben Morse. Ben, thanks for joining us here on DC for You.
Oh my God, I'm so excited to be here on DC for You. I'm psyched that we're headed into the fall, much like Greg is, because here in Las Vegas, it's about 300 degrees during the summer. And I appreciate you housing both of our egos. I think that you may have underestimated mine before you invited me on.
I never underestimate your ego, Ben. That is something I am just not capable of doing.
It's a living planet unto itself.
Yes, it is. And I really hope that you didn't give some poor bastard's mother the cancer.
Whoa. No comment.
You totally did. I think that's something that's a total Ben Morse move.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's the kind of thing I'm known for, Russell.
And Kurt Russell hair.
Yes. Oh yeah.
I definitely. So what a summer it was. We had Avengers Endgame. We had Spider-Man Far From Home. We didn't have any DC movies, but we will soon with the Joker. But today we're talking about The Flash, and we're kicking off kind of a little theme month, mini theme month of The Flash here for September. talking about our favorite Flash stories. I didn't start reading The Flash until, well, you know what? I guess I started reading around 1983. Kerry Bates, Carmine Infantino, The Trial of the Flash. Barry Allen was on trial for killing the Reverse Flash, who had summarily killed Iris West. Spoiler alert. So that was kind of my introduction to The Flash. I read a little bit of his adventures, and then that series ended in issue 350, where it picked up in The Crisis on Infinite Earths. Russell, do you have any thoughts on the pre-Crisis Barry Allen Flash?
You know, I have very little experience with the pre-Crisis version of Barry Allen. And I think that's just a testament to where I would have experienced him first, which honestly would have been Wally West. Like, he was the first Flash I ever saw in any media. But when it comes to the Silver Age version of the Flash that I have read, he's a little stiff for my taste. He doesn't seem to have too much personality, at least as far as I can tell. And it would be some time, at least as far as I know the history of this character, before he would get a much-needed revamping by one of my favorite comic book writers.
Yeah, well, before we move on, let's kind of, did anybody have any other thoughts on the Silver Age Tales of the Flash? Historically, very important. Maybe sometimes more defined by his rogues gallery, because he had a fantastic rogues gallery for the time, maybe second only to, or third only to Batman and Spider-Man. Ben, I know you are kind of a student of the Silver Age, and especially books like Justice League. Any thoughts on Flash from back then?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, my first exposure to the Flash was when I was a kid in the 80s, not actually reading the comics, but more through watching old episodes of Super Friends. And the Flash was always my favorite character, both because I thought he had a great costume. I think that that red and yellow design is one of the all-time classics. And just because I thought super speed was a really cool power. I always thought it was more unique than just flying. So I always got really into that. But for me as a kid, I didn't know Barry Allen, Wally West, any of this. I just knew The Flash. As I've gone back and read some of the older stuff, I actually have quite an appreciation for the Silver Age Barry Allen stuff. I agree with Russell 100% that Barry as a character in the Silver Age is not the most compelling leading man, but the work that John Broome as a writer and Carmine Infantino as an artist did in his early stuff, it's just fun. To me, a lot of Silver Age DC suffers from not a lot of personality, not a lot of idealized voices. When it comes to the Silver Age, I've always been more biased towards the Marvel stuff just because, you know, give me Peter Parker and his flaws over Clark Kent being perfection. I think DC would, you know, refine things later on. But as far as the Flash in the Silver Age, you nailed it, Todd. What made him fun was he had a great rogues gallery. He had interesting villains. And just the idea that Broome was really smart and incorporated science in a way that was really fun. So the yep. way that Flash would win, invariably, would be some cool way he would use either his powers or the fact that he was a scientist to solve a problem. Whether that's, you know, figuring out how to counter Captain Cold or dealing with aliens who had turned him into a fat guy or anything like that. He has a typical Silver Age gimmick, but I think there was more thinking behind his stories than some of his DC contemporaries.
Which issue was the fat guy one? Because I need to figure out what his strategy for that was.
Oh my God. I don't remember the issue number, but if you read, I have a trade that I could not lend you called, so I just realized I'd have to ship it to you. But if you go on DC Universe, look for something in about the 130s or 140s. The cover is literally Flash as a big fat guy, and I'm not going to spoil for you.
All right, Flash, I'm going to give you one chance to help me out here. I never did get back at those aliens that caused my condition.
The issue number you're looking for, Greg, is issue number 115.
Okay,
115. I'm gonna search for it. And I think that the longest lasting kind of legacy of that era, Ben, you kind of touched on it at the beginning, is that costume. I've talked many times to Russell about this, that I feel like that Silver Age Flash costume is one of the best superhero costumes ever designed. And it's so great that every time they try to change it, it never really sticks. Whether it's adding the yellow lines on it, there are modifications that happen, but at the end of the day, it really kind of goes back to that base that if you mess with it too much, you realize just how perfect that original design was.
Yes, one that they certainly got right, I think, pretty much from the jump, because with a character like the Flash, and to Ben's point about the science aspect of the character being added in, when the Silver Age, which is a far cry of the costume from Jay Garrick, who wore that long round brim hat and everything, not a super aerodynamic design. Flash in the from the Silver Age forward, it was like they were incorporating the idea of him being an aerodynamic character, one who was trying to combat things like wind shear and drag and stuff like that. So this one piece suit that's fitting skin tight to him is all about making it easier for him to move through the air. And that design is something that I don't feel like you can really mess with because it's just so integral to his power set.
Go ahead, Ben.
Go ahead.
Well, we can't discount just.
These guys are moving way too fast. This is what it's like having a conversation between Barry and Wally when they're speaking at super speed.
Todd, you go first, then I'll jump in.
All right. We just can't discount how historically important the Silver Age Flash is. For two reasons specifically. Back in Showcase number 4, they debuted, John Broome and Carmine Infantino on art, debuted the Silver Age Flash, and what made him unique was that he was an updating of a long kind of dormant character, the Golden Age Flash. And so he ushered in a new age of superhero comics, taking older concepts, tweaking them. You had some constant characters in Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, who'd been consistently published since World War II era, but the Flash was brought out from mothballs, tweaked, given a new name, a new origin, created a new age of comics. The second thing about him is that they brought in the concept of parallel Earths in Flash, and that's a huge thing. The Flash of Two Worlds storyline, which every DC fan has talked about, knows a little bit about, gave us the entire Earth 1, Earth 2 concept and led to decades of interesting stories, plus giving fans their own personal versions of the Flash they could root for. I'm still a Golden Age guy. I'm still reading Jay Garrick. I'm being hypothetical here because I don't think anybody really did. But but it was because you had Flash Barry Allen reading about the adventures of Jay Garrick in comics. And so bringing him into the stories, he gets to have these adventures with his hero. Eventually, we have the whole meetups of the Justice League and the Justice Society and their annual team-ups for years and years. And then we had Crisis on Infinite Earths, kind of mushed all the Earths together, and it turns out that there weren't, DC rewriting its history, there weren't any alternate Earths. There's just one Earth, one history. Jay Garrick passed the mantle of the Flash to Barry Allen and so on and so forth. That's where we were left in 1986.
And when you make these arguments like that, and certainly when you listen to other prominent creators who've worked on The Flash, specifically Mark Waid and Geoff Johns, when they talk about the DC Universe, in a lot of ways, they'll kind of hint for or absolutely say that The Flash could be considered the heart of the DCU. He is, in any version, be he Jay, be Barry, Wally, this character is kind of that through line, that thread that connects everything to everything else. He is a character that people tend to look to as, the constant picture of hope and duty within the DCU. And that's something that I definitely get from Barry Allen especially whenever I'm reading some of his more modern stories, is that that's who he's kind of trying to be. And unlike other characters within the DCU who have also attempted to be that, he seems to shoulder it pretty naturally and never let it fully overwhelm him, which is another thing that I think can make Barry Allen come off as a little stiff to some people. But if it's handled well, and I think Geoff Johns is a writer who's handled it incredibly well, he can come off as, you know, very inspirational, as someone that you'll look to and really start to get into his stories, and you see why he's so beloved. So that, I think, would be my deeper take on Barry Allen, as he has been updated, of course, and the Flash's overall role in the DCU. But and with that, what I'd like to do is I think we should go around the room here, and everybody give us your absolute top favorite Flash story ever. Like, this is the Flash story that you would point to and say, this made me a fan. This is the Flash story that you would hand to somebody who has maybe never read The Flash, or somebody that maybe has just a little bit of familiarity with it. Just what do you think would turn somebody into a Flash fan? And I think I'd like to start with Greg on this one. So, Greg, what is the Flash story that just pops to your mind whenever the character is mentioned?
Well, the one that pops in my mind is the one that is the best that I've read and the one that sticks with me the longest. And there have been some great Flash stories that I've read, but the one that stands out above the rest is a story arc called Blitz. And this was in The Flash number 192 to 200 in the early 2000s, written by Jeff Johns, drawn by Scott Collins. And this was sort of the culmination of what Jeff Johns had been writing to this point. Obviously, it ends in the 200th issue of The Flash, which is a huge milestone. But this was something that Jeff Johns had been building to for a long, long time. So really, honestly, the best way to read this is to see if you can get a hold of one of those Jeff Johns Flash omnibuses. I have the Flash Omnibus 1 and the Flash Omnibus 2 by Jeff Johns. This story plays out actually in Omnibus 2. And it's such a great story. It is all about the character of Hunter Zolomon, who, otherwise known as Zoom, who is probably on a very short list of my favorite DC or Marvel villains. He's certainly, I think, the greatest modern creation villain, the greatest villain that's come maybe along with Scott Snyder's Court of Owls in the last, you know, 20 years or so. And he's just this guy that wants to make the Flash better. He's like any great villain, he's got an interesting motivation. And when you follow Hunter Zolomon's story through Jeff Johns' run, this last arc in particular gets so personal with Wally West has worked. I should mention that it is a Wally West story, not a Barry Allen story. But Wally has worked so hard to build this family that he has with Linda, and she learns that she's pregnant and trying to plan for their future together. And in this story, Hunter Zolomon realizes in his mind that the only way to make the Flash better is through tragedy and through suffering. And the way that this all culminates, I don't want to spoil it too bad for anybody out there that might want to give this story a shot, because it was really one of those stories that shocks you when you first read it. And it has one of the most emotionally powerful conclusions of any comic book story arc that you can find in superheroes anyway. And so that's the one that pops to my mind, Russell, as the best that I've read among a crowded field of really great stories. It is a Wally story, and I do think it works best not in a vacuum. In other words, it works better if you see all the buildup to it, sort of like I would say with something like the Sinestro Corps War, which is an amazing story, works better if you have the buildup to it, makes it even more impactful. Certainly, in this case, that's true. But even, I think, just reading the arc alone, while you will be devoid of some of the context, you will get the emotion. I think this is Scott Collins' finest hour. I think this is two creators that are just in lockstep with one another. And for me, it doesn't get any better than that for The Flash.
And certainly, I think we can really go in depth on this. There could be a whole podcast dedicated to Jeff Johns' ability to make great villains and challenges for heroes, because I think that's really his biggest strength when telling stories like this. And Hunter Zolomon is certainly a fantastic creation, one of my favorite villains in modern comics. And I'm sure that in the second half we're going to talk a bit more about Scott Collins, because he is a guy who certainly is going to have be in that conversation of best Flash artists. So, But that's a really good story. That is one that I am actually a little bit familiar with. And I will say, just for full disclosure, I, as a Geoff Johns fanboy, totally, I own that. But I tried his Flash run to begin with in that first omnibus, and the Wonderland story arc did not grab me at all. It was, I got real worried that his Flash run was not going to be for me. I am happy to say that if you just get past that first story, things start really picking up.
Well,
it gets way better.
And Ben and I maybe should jump in here. Geoff Johns wasn't Geoff Johns then.
We didn't
have expectations of it being a story. He was kind of like stepping in where Wade left, and nobody really knew who Geoff Johns was or what he was capable of. He was finding his feet, developing himself as a writer. That particular arc, at the time, we didn't think about it just because we didn't hold Geoff Johns to a standard necessarily that was much higher. He developed or grew along with the character and reached those high heights in stories like Blitz. But yeah, I'm in defense of the Wonderland stuff, it is kind of underwhelming if you go back and look at it. But at the time, it wasn't that bad. I think I was more into like, well, boy, this art is sure different. I don't know if I like it or not at the time, you know?
Yeah, it's I mean, if you look back at the history of that story, it actually got really popular because initially it was supposed to be just a 6-issue fill-in, as I understand it. It was just supposed to be a very temporary thing, but then Geoff Johns was made the permanent writer on the Flash, and his run lasted for a good long while there, and it turned out to be really great. It's a pretty storied run on the character, and kind of redefined him for a modern era, if you will. But
and to both of your points, that I totally agree about the Wonderland arc being kind of, you know, looking at it through the realm of hindsight, because I wasn't reading comics at the time when John started writing the Flash. But going back and reading it through the omnibus, there you can tell the difference in that arc versus as soon as he becomes sort of the regular ongoing writer. There's a difference. There's seeds being planted, because really nothing in that Wonderland arc ultimately matters, as far as I can remember. It's kind of like a standalone kind of thing. And to Todd's point, you can see that Johns wasn't quite the bricklayer that he would become later in his long form story arcs. But you start to see that pretty much from Jump Street, when they introduce Hunter Zolomon in that first omnibus, and how he builds throughout the course of the run, that as you mentioned, Russell, becomes a very storied Flash run.
Yeah. I think the other knock on Wonderland is that you see Geoff's strengths as a writer is when he can build a world around his lead character.
Mm-hmm.
It in Green Lantern, you see it in JSA, you see it in pretty much all of his work. It's when he has a city, a setting to work with, when he has a supporting cast to work with, when he has particularly the villains to work with. The handicap he had with Wonderland is it's an alternate reality story. So the only real consistent element he had was Wally, and he does a good job with Wally, but once he started his record run and could really start establishing, okay, this is where he lives, these are the people he's friends with, these are the villains he fights, once he creates that world for him, that's where Geoff Johns can really start to cook. I don't think Wonderland, I don't hate Wonderland, but I don't think it's the best exemplar of what he could do on Flash or in general, because I just don't think it's his kind of story.
Sure. And that's a good segue there, Ben, to your favorite Flash story of all time, when it may not be a Geoff Johns story. In fact, I'm kind of expecting it isn't.
So I'm really glad that Greg mentioned Blitz, because it basically came down to Blitz and the one I'm going to name. So I'm glad that he gave a spotlight on this. I think Blitz is the best Geoff Johns Wally West story. It's just phenomenal. It's everything Greg already said about it. A couple other quick honorable mentions before I get to mine. I will say, in tribute to kind of that Silver Age stuff we were talking about earlier, and Todd already mentioned this, but Flash number 123, The Flash of Two Earths, or Flash of Two Worlds, one of the best stories of all time. The Jay Garrick meets Barry Allen story is just a tremendous amount of fun. And it's just such a cool idea. And like Todd said, it gave us literally decades of DC Comics stories. And it's a rare DC Silver Age story that I think stands the test of time as far as just being enjoyable and giving you really something to dig into.
Yep, and that's in Flash 123, if anybody wants to look that up on DC Universe.
Then the other Flash story I want to throw a little love to is a Barry Allen story, and ironically enough, it's the death of Barry Allen in Crisis on Infinite Earths number 8. I think it's Barry Allen's maybe best story of all time to that point, at least. You could say some of the modern stories maybe are a little bit better, but just what you guys were talking about, the idea of the Flash being kind of the center of the DC universe, the fact that in the middle of the biggest DC story of all time, we get an issue solely devoted to Barry Allen, basically being the greatest hero of that era, because he takes on the greatest sacrifice he can in order to save everybody. That, to me, for years, the reason I resisted against Barry Allen coming back was because, and you guys talk about this way back on Post-Crisis Management, he has one of the best deaths.
One of the best.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah, great, so, great ending for him.
And I think that was one of the reasons I was very resistant when they brought Barry back. Wasn't even so much I don't like Barry Allen and I love Wally West, even though I do love Wally West. It was more, I love Wally West, but I also feel like Barry Allen's story came to such a wonderful ending. Why would you bring him back? And that segues into my story, my number one story, the one I would hand to anyone. And that is the return of Barry Allen.
Damn you.
From Flash number 74 through 79, written by Mark Waid, art by Greg LaRocque. This is a story in which it's set a few years after Crisis. Wally West has been the Flash for a little while now, but has never fully settled into the role, has always kind of felt like he was in the shadow of Barry, who, again, gave his life to save reality. How can you possibly live up to that? So Return of Barry Allen is exactly what it sounds like. Barry Allen comes back. And it's a story about Barry being back, but more than that, it's a story of, well, what happens to Wally if Barry's back? And there's some amazing twists, and I'm not going to spoil them because I absolutely think anyone who's not read this story needs to go read it. If it doesn't sell you on the concept of the Flash and the character specifically of Wally West, then there's probably no hope for you being a fan of these characters. But the place, number one, it introduces a lot of cool things. It brings Jay Garrick into it. It introduces Max Mercury. Really sets up Wade's run on the remainder of the Flash, which he would be on for years. And the way it shows you that Wally West is special when it comes to the DC universe and to comics. He's the only, I would argue, sidekick character who was able to graduate and become a full-fledged hero. You could make some argument that obviously Dick Grayson is right there with him and some other characters are along the same lines, but Wally made it all the way. He became his mentor's full successor. He was in the Justice League. He was well-known by everyone, well-respected, well-loved, and Return of Barry Allen is kind of where that starts. It's kind of where we start transitioning from the uncertain, almost cocky and immature Wally of those first few post-crisis years to the hero that would really be defined and we'd all come to know and love. And I think, obviously, the two main Wally West writers, which we'll probably talk about in the second half of the show, are Geoff Johns and Mark Waid. What always separated them to me is that Mark Waid did the heavy lifting on making Wally West incredible character, and then when Jeff came in, he was able to kind of build a world around Wally based on the tracks that Wade had already laid. So that's my long way of saying that Wade's run to me is formative. Return of Barry Allen is really where it starts cooking. He has a bunch of other great stories, Born to Run, Terminal Velocity, some great stuff with Wally and Linda, but that's a great place to start.
I'm glad you brought that up because this was a tough decision for me, and I went back and I read just a couple nights ago, actually, and even the night before we were recording this, I went back and read a Geoff Johns story that I hadn't visited in a little while, and I remembered loving it when it came out, and now I'm I'm pretty sure that it's going to be my favorite Flash story. But just to give me a chance to see something from a different angle, I today read a Mark Waid story. I'm glad you brought up Born to Run, because I'm going to be honest with you guys, I've never read it before. I had never read Born to Run. So I sat down and I read it in its entirety today. And I was just really pulled into the story. I couldn't put it down. And the basis of that story is it's by Mark Waid and Greg LaRocque, as Ben mentioned before. It's the beginning of Mark Waid's run on The Flash. And you pick up in modern day with Wally West, but then he, of course, tells his story through memories. Like, he has a kind of a flashback to how he became Kid Flash, his relationship with Barry, how that built over time, and how he eventually becomes more the hero that we know him as in the modern day. I was very pulled into this story, but I'm going to have to give my favorite Flash story of all time to a Barry Allen story, and that is The Dastardly Death of the Rogues from Geoff Johns and the absolutely incredible artist Francis Manapul, and colorist Brian Bussolato, who deserves a lot of credit for his work on that title. This was a Brightest Day tie-in. Took place right after Blackest Night had ended, Geoff Johns' big Green Lantern event. Barry Allen had been brought back from the dead in Final Crisis by Grant Morrison. And Geoff Johns, though, was the one who really took Barry and reestablished him in the DC Universe, first with Flash Rebirth, and then moving into his own relaunched ongoing solo title, where he joined forces with an artist that he had been working with for a little while in the DCU, first on Adventure Comics, telling a Superboy story, which I absolutely recommend everybody go read, and then, of course, jumping into this first story arc in The Flash. And from the jump, it is all leading to Flashpoint. That is exactly where Geoff Johns is about to go with this, and he plants the seeds for it right from the first issue of this run. But what he does differently is something that both Greg and Ben have both you guys have alluded to, is Geoff Johns first takes the surroundings around the main character and makes that work first. And he does that same thing. He does that very thing with this. He gives you Flash's world in its entirety. And he takes those villains that operate in Flash's world and makes them so much more than just bad guys for their own sake. I mean, sure, these guys are out for themselves, but why are they out for themselves? Why do these guys dress up in these funny-looking costumes and rob places? What's the point of it all? And the thing that Geoff Johns does best, thing I think that he does best in every single long-form story he's ever told, is he gives you villains who are the heroes of their own story. And this story is no different. The villain in this story, or villains in this story, are themselves, like, they know that they're criminals, but they are still the heroes of their own stories. And whenever you get into the motivations of why they do what they do, it makes it all so much more intriguing. And it also doesn't hurt that he updates Barry's personality for a modern age. He gives you basically the version of Barry Allen that you know from if you've watched the live action TV show. This is where it starts. This is where you start getting that version of Barry Allen. And it is absolutely tremendous. The story moves at such a great pace. Everything about it is exactly the kind of Flash story that I want to read. And while it does have a lot of, like, fantastical stuff in there, because, I mean, he's a speedster, how could you not? It also finds a way to be a mystery detective story, because Barry Allen is a police CSI for Central City. That's what he does. And all of that gets incorporated into this story seamlessly. It is wonderfully done. He uses that in his everyday life and in his work as the Flash. We get great appearances from all of the Rogues, and we get introduced to the Renegades, the 25th century version of the Rogues, who are now law enforcement officers, because the Flash of the 25th century is the reverse Flash, Hunter Zolomon, Professor Zoom. And these Renegades were put together to combat him specifically. This story...
Not Hunter Zolomon.
Yes, Hunter Zolomon. He's actually mentioned...
It's not Yobard Thawne. Is it a retcon?
Yes, there is a retconning here, but they mention Zoom specifically by name. And it's pretty tremendous, like how they weave in and out of everything. But there's the other retcon too of Reverse Flash being responsible for the death of Barry's mom.
Yes,
that's something that was done by Geoff Johns, and that's another big like plot point of this story that is planting the big seed, of course, for what's going to happen in Flashpoint. So. This is a story that I think you could hand to anybody, and it would get them on board. They would immediately become a Flash fan if they're going to love this character at all. It would tie right into a lot of stuff that they've seen on the CW show, if you're familiar with that. It'll feel nice and comfortable and familiar. You'll be able to get right into it. And on top of that, as I mentioned before, Francis Manapul's art is mind-blowingly good. He is at like peak form here in his character designs. The way he portrays Flash's powers is really interesting and always fun to watch. He doesn't start really playing with crazy layouts until he takes over as both writer and artist of the ongoing Flash solo title in the New 52. But he does have a few really interesting and fun layout designs within this opening story arc. So you start seeing that a little bit here, but the art is always just so, so good. This is the most dynamic Flash art that I think I have ever seen. So that first volume from Geoff Johns, Francis Manapul, Dastardly Death of the Rogues, takes place in the Flash 1 through 6 that started in the year 2010. So go check that out on DCU. Todd, it's down to you.
Well, okay. I'm sorry to step on you there because...
You're good.
You know, the Reverse Flash, I always knew him as Professor Zoom back in the day. And that was how they referred to him. So I'll have to check that out.
Yobard Thawne, right?
Right. And that was always a different character than Zoom, Hunter Zolomon, created by Geoff Johns, kind of like Wally West's Reverse Flash, right? So I'll have to check and see, or check with my DC continuity cops and find out the real scoop keeping up on this. But going back to my favorite Flash story, before Ben stole my thunder, I was going to say that, but the Return of Barry Allen, because it's where Wally West comes into his own, truly. Really, Mark Waid's second strong arc on Wally West Flash when he took over for William Messner Lebs. Other great Flash stories that I could point to, you know, first-time readers, certainly Crisis number 8, or I don't know that I could say, hey, first-time person who wants to read about the Flash, check out The Flash in Crisis. You would be so confused. But
what in the hell is an anti-monitor?
Yeah, there's so much going on. But wow. I love the little moments of Flash, Barry Allen, running around with Psycho Pirate and holding him up to everybody and changing their emotions is great. He goes out like a true hero and he wastes away. It's unforgettable, especially with the George Perez art. But
Psycho Pirate is so cool.
Yeah, and, you know, the one character who remembered everything. I can't wait to see him on TV some more coming up here in the Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover we're going to get on the DC CW shows. Another great representation of the Flash was by Darwin Cook in The New Frontier, kind of the ultimate Silver Age tribute book. Wonderfully
great stuff.
Wonderfully drawn and written characterization of Barry, the guy who's late for everything and his bow tie and his flat top, kind of a tribute to how he was back in the day, you know, his characteristics. But he was in many ways the purest hero, you know, the guy who was always on. But my favorite, now that we've kind of taken Born to Run off the table, not Born to Run, but the Return of Barry Allen off the table, I'm going to say this is kind of a dark horse story. It's not written by either Jeff Johns or Mark Waid, but this is from the Wally West era, but it's before Mark Waid. I don't know if any of you are even familiar with this story, but this story comes from Flash, second series, number 54.
Yes!
September of 1991, William Messner Lebs. This is a done-in-one comic.
Dude, I literally was just looking up this issue number to mention it as an honorable mention story. This was the first Flash comic I ever bought.
Oh, you're pretty lucky. I think, you know, I'd read a lot of Silver Age Flash and read about him in the Justice League, and then the transition to Wally West. I read some of those issues. Mike Baron, I think, was the writer early on. But Messner Lebs actually did quite a bit with Barry. I'm sorry, Wally. There I go again. I started reading it in earnest at issue 50, where he kind of got an upgrade to his costume. He got more of this metallic red costume. Enjoyed the stories and the art by Gregor Larocque quite a bit. But this done-in-one issue is entitled Nobody Dies. And it talks a lot about Wally. Wally's the protagonist, obviously. It's the Flash, but the thought balloons or the narration boxes are all in his voice. It's all first person from him. And you get to see things as he sees them, slowed down. You know, it's kind of like the Quicksilver thing in the X-Men movies. He does things at a different time. He's so far ahead of everything, you get to follow how his powers work. And the thing about this story, his commitment to not letting anyone die. And a lot of people will refer this to this as the airplane story. And this is. It is a story where you get his commitment to not letting anybody die on his watch. He's the fastest man alive. Nobody dies. That's literally the name of the comic. And a stewardess gets sucked out of the airplane. It's got, I think the Morts, the villains here are just kind of metahuman supremacists. I don't remember anything too particularly about them other than, you know, they're taking an airplane hostage like in Air Force One or any of those movies.
Or the Chuck Norris movie Invasion USA. Huh?
Yes, of course. The Chuck Norris movie with which I am intimately familiar with. Not at all. But in the course of this issue, the stewardess gets sucked out of the airplane. Whoa, hey now. And Wally has to decide how is she going to survive on his watch. So he jumps out and figures out a way to save her as she's in free fall. Fantastic done in one story. And you know, you can point to saying there are good stories pre-Mark Waid. Great Wally stories. The voicing of him is pretty good. Lebs only got about another six or seven issues before Waid took over with Born to Run on this series. But I remember reading it then, reread it recently, and it does hold up. It's a just fantastic window look into Wally West as a hero, his commitment to using his powers to save people, and just a fantastic story with the climax that is unforgettable and funny at the same time. Really enjoyed the writing and the characterization of Wally West here. And good happy ending. I recommend, if you've never read it, Flash 54 from 1991. That's going to be my top story pick here, even though it's a done-in-one. You know, you'll read it in about 20 minutes and you'll like it.
So the way that I read comics...
Brought that up, bud.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, the way that I read comics as a kid was we would buy them from the grocery store. Like, I would just see one that caught my eye and annoy my mom until she bought it for me. And if I was lucky. And so I remember seeing this cover, and I had been watching the Flash TV show. That was my gateway to the Flash, was the TV show in 1990. And so I was like,
one.
I am. And so as a kid, I was about, I would have been about six or seven at this time. And so I remember we were at the grocery store, and I see this Flash comic. Obviously, the season had wrapped up for the Flash, I guess. And so I saw this
the series cover. For that matter.
Right. And I saw the Flash kind of plummeting to the earth with this this woman in his arm. And I said, I want to buy this. I want to read more about the Flash. And so I did. And I remember, like, it was the first time I really understood how the Flash's powers worked beyond running fast. Like, the fact that time slows down for him. And it was just such a clever way of approaching the character. And for that reason, because this was my first Flash comic, it's always kind of held a special place in my heart. And Bill Messner-Lebs, his run, held a special place in my heart just because I didn't read a lot of his issues. But I always thought that he had a way of writing these compelling done-in-one issues. And Greg LaRocque's art, which kind of defined the Flash for that era, really good stuff here, Todd. I'm really glad you mentioned this story.
I'm glad you brought it up too, Todd, because specifically I think Bill Messner-Lebs is one of the unsung heroes of early 90s comics. Great Flash writer, great Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
Had a solid run on Thor, did some more outside-the-box stuff. He was actually the writer on Sam Keith's The Max, which I loved. But just a really talented, good writer who, you're right, he does have to get credit for. Mike Barron was the first post-crisis Wally West writer, and he did a little bit of work in laying down the groundwork for what Wally would become. But you're right, Messner-Lebs did some tremendous stuff, and I'm glad you brought him up.
I wanted to also say one thing about the return of Barry Allen, which got brought up earlier. That was the first Flash story arc that I read, because you know I was very inconsistent with which comics I was able to buy. And the Flash wasn't one of my favorites or anything, but I remember that the idea of Barry Allen returning struck a chord with me because of the TV show. And so I remember I read that story arc, and it really was amazing. And it's what made me really buy into Wally West permanently as the Flash when I was a kid. So,
well, that's all of these stories have been like great mentions. I actually now have a little bit more reading that I get to do whenever we finish this. I'm hoping that everybody who's listening to this will go out and read every one of these stories, mm-hmm. because every single one of them mentioned will, if these don't make you a Flash fan, nothing's going to.
Agreed.
This is a good cross-section of Flash eras and writers and artists. Lots of different flavors for somebody to enjoy, and I would say that there's definitely a Flash for you somewhere inside all of this, all of these stories that have been mentioned. So with that, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back on the other side of the break, we're going to get into it with who is the best Flash writer and the tougher question, who is the best Flash artist of all time. And of course, we're going to be mentioning who we think is the greatest live action and animated Flash. That probably won't take too long. So we'll be right back in a few minutes.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to be Nation Pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth search projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
What is up, PTBN homies? It's your manager, Todd Weber, here to talk about all the things going on and going down on PlaceToBeNation.com and our podcast feeds. Over on the Place to Be Nation Pop feed, the Hard Traveling Fanboys had a big show where they welcomed WWE SmackDown referee Jason Ayers for a new series called Secret Origins. Jason delves into the similarities between comic books and wrestling, He explains the stories and characters that have made him a lifelong comics fan. Great show, check it out. On last week's DC4U, Russell and Todd, that's me, dive into what's going on with DC Comics right now in the monthly current events and read listener picks for the best Justice League Unlimited episodes in honor of that show's 15th anniversary. First Lady of Pop, Jennifer Smith, invites Nate Milton to watch Jordan Peele's Get Out on the 13th episode of Freak Out Drive-In. We also had a brand new show join the Pop Feed this week, siblings Karen... I said Karen, it's siblings Kevin and Mary. I tried to combine them into one name. That didn't work. Kevin and Mary, they host the Brother Sister Rewatch podcast. They are breaking down The Office. They are on season 2, episodes 21 and 22, including the seminal, Casino Night episode where Jim declared his love for Pam. Remember that one? On a brand new Looking Forward, Looking Back, host Andy Atherton is joined by Jennifer Smith, Tim Capel, and Scott Criscolo to preview the upcoming fall and winter movie releases. On the newest episode of Marvel Age, our favorite Sarcastic Four, including Russell and myself, take a concentrated look at roughly one-third of the most significant of Marvel's output throughout 1972. We look at some horror offerings from Marvel, including Tomb of Dracula and Werewolf by Night. As a small screen companion to Pop Goes to the Movies, enjoy the premiere episode of Pops Goes to the Couch. Not Pops Goes to the Couch, that's my life after I get home from work. Pop Goes to the Couch, which will spotlight a current series from the worlds of television or streaming media. On the first edition, the third season of Glow takes a stage with your hosts, J.T. Rosero, Jennifer Smith, and Tim Capel. Jennifer Smith and Miranda run down the comprehensive list of new and returning TV shows in the latest Geek and Sassy. They also announce a huge giveaway contest. Be sure to listen and stay tuned to their social media for details. Geek and Sassy. Roger and D'Amato preview the forthcoming NFL season on the latest PTBN Sports Pod. It's This Week in the NFL, Week 1. I hope that comes out every week. That would be awesome. Greatest Song of the 80s Tournament over on our Facebook group is continuing. There's 4 polls a day. We're on round 3. You can get in on the action on Facebook by searching PTBN's Greatest Song of the 80s Tournament. Like the page. Be sure to weigh in. It is a ton of fun. Over on the PTBN Wrestling feed, PTBN's main event, episode 132 previews, NJPW's Royal Quest. NXT UK TakeOver Cardiff featuring an amazing match between Walter and Tyler Bate, and AEW's All Out. Plus, they had a New Japan Classic match pick. My friend Steve Willey is on that show. Join Jennifer Smith, Tim Capel, Scott Criscolo, and Nate Milton as they react to and break down AEW's All Out show from Chicago in a PTBN Network special. Ben Zanny welcomes Dan Scotty, promoter of Pizza Wrestling, on the 21st episode of Row 1, Seat 1, on episode number 4 of Extreme Three-Way Dance. JT D'Amato and Jennifer Smith continue their ECW adventure with 3 episodes of Hardcore TV from March 1994. On PlaceToBeNation.com, PTBN's tribute to 1994 continues to roll on with lots of great content. Every Wednesday on PlaceToBeNation.com, we've got the most interesting and unexpectedly funny stories on the World Wide Web in Glenn's Weekly Walk Around the Web. Check out our social media pages and message board on Bigelow34.proboards.com for information on joining our GWWE pay-per-view and TV match ever project. Get in on that conversation today. Start researching your list. And now, back to DC4U.
Welcome back to DC4U. I'm Todd Weber with Russell Sellers. We have Greg Phillips and Ben Morse here talking about The Flash. The first half of our show, we discussed our favorite Flash stories. And this half of the show, we'll be talking about our favorite Flash creators and perhaps lead characters. Russell, what'd you think of the picks we all came up with in the first half?
First half was real good. Everybody, I think, has something different. something that is like uniquely Flash, something that I think if you put it in the hands of someone who's only like vaguely familiar with the character or even has no knowledge of the character whatsoever, they should be a fan by the time they finish reading it. And as we move into the second half, I think we're going to be getting we're going to dig a little deeper on the creators or our favorite creators who have defined the character over the years. And
you will indeed.
And of course, some characters from other media. And since that will probably be the shorter side of the show, I guess we can go ahead and mention that because Flash has been an important part of other media. He's been in television and film. But I think we all may have the same answer for this first question, so I'll just put it to the group. Who is the best live action Flash that we've ever had? My answer
Grant
is
Gustin.
Yep, my answer is the same, Greg. It's Grant Gustin on the CW. Anybody got anything different?
That's nope. Really unfair. That's like saying who was the greatest WCW champion from 1984 till 1990, right? Of all though, the main guy who's got more work than anybody else as the Flash is Grant Gustin.
Yeah.
I mean, the answer there was Ric Flair, by the way, if you didn't know that I was inferring.
I was going to guess Ron Garvin.
Yeah, hands of stone, Barney Rubble, Ron Garvin. No, I'm disgusting. I'm talking about Grant Gustin. I mean, who else do you have? You have the guy who played the Flash in Legends of the Superheroes. You have 1992's Flash, who has been brought back in RCW Flash as Jay Garrick.
Yep.
And you
John West's ship.
There
from
we go.
1990.
And his veneers. He's looking great these days. The other representation of the Flash we have in live action was what? The failed JLA pilot that nobody saw?
Mm-hmm. That, Ezra Miller from Justice League.
Oh, that doesn't count. Never happened, bro.
Never happened.
Everyone's going to have forgotten about him in like a year or so anyway. Maybe less.
Yeah, but, well, if we know one thing about Grant Gustin, he's better than Ezra.
Oh, for sure. Grant is a tremendous Flash and somebody that I think has really taken that ball that Geoff Johns got rolling on this take on Barry Allen and he's just – you know, pardon the constant puns that are being made, but he took the ball and he ran with it.
He is the Robert Downey Jr. of the Flash. He has defined that character for me.
He has has given that character.
It's so cool. Is he clearly loves playing it? Like there's a joy to his performance. The same Downey Jr. comparison is apt, Greg, because he clearly is having the time of his life playing this character, and it shows in his performance.
It fully comes through. He is a testament to how much fun it can be playing a superhero, and he does it with such great, like, just poise, depth, and just all around fun. He is defined that role, and very much like Robert Downey Jr. I would throw another comparison out there for me anyway. Very much like a Reeve Superman or Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman. He has kind of become that character. That's what we will always associate him as, and that's how I kind of now see Barry Allen as a character. Mm-hmm. But moving on from that, of course, Flash has had a couple of turns in animation, and my top pick there is I think Michael Rosenbaum nailed it when he voiced the character on Superman the Animated Series, Justice League, and Justice League Unlimited.
That's all I
can really say about the animation turns of the Flash is that's the
he was
one. That's
he was
the one.
Outstanding. Yeah, for a great example of the Flash in animation, check out the Justice League Unlimited episode "Flash and Substance," I believe is the name of it. And this is the episode where it's really all about the Flash. He doesn't get a lot of individual episodes on the show, but it's to me the best version of the Flash that we've got in animation. Rosenbaum is tremendous. It's simultaneously funny and serious. And this may not actually be the episode that I'm thinking of. The episode I'm thinking of, Russell, is the one where we actually meet the Flash Museum. Yeah.
Yeah. Now you're, I think you're correct on that. Flash and Substance sounds correct. But another episode I would point to is actually an anthology episode of Justice League that takes place at Christmas time, an episode called Comfort and Joy. Mm-hmm. And in this, you have Wally West teaming up with a very unlikely, the unlikeliest of allies, when he teams up with the Ultra Humanite, to who's typically a villain. And their goal in this becomes a shared one of helping these kid in an orphanage get this pretty kind of awful toy that they all wanted. It's a rapping duck that also makes like fart noises. It's not exactly. It's totally a thing that kids would be into, and they, in a very unlikely twist of circumstances, actually wind up working together, and things don't go quite as smoothly as either of them had wanted. But ultimately, I felt like it was a great representation of the Flash and why he's so different from all the other heroes and what makes him such a joy to follow along, to follow through his stories. And it's a probably the most fun I've ever had watching or reading an Ultra Humanite story.
Yeah, I think Paul Dini wrote that one, and Michael Rosenbaum, to me, he matches that, particularly that sort of Mike Baron, William Messner Lebs, early Mark Waid, Wally West voice, where he's kind of aloof a lot of the time, but you can tell he also has a heart underneath that. So
yeah, he's very much the showboat, and that's pretty consistent throughout his history with the Justice League animated series, but underneath it all, he is very much, you know, the character with a heart of gold, and you find out that he's one of the most selfless characters, really, in the entire league. This is just his way of sometimes masking his own insecurities and fears through humor. But
do either of you guys know off the top of your head the name of the finale where Flash is the last man standing against Luthor and Brainiac?
Oh, God, so good. What is the name of that episode? Lord Almighty. It was that's amazing. Yeah, that was...
It's the single... like we were saying in the first half, the story you point someone to if you want to make them a Flash fan, that sequence of the Flash being the last hero left against basically the toughest opponent the Justice League has ever faced, and the way he ends up resolving the situation, to me, might be... and even including the stuff on the CW show, might be the most pure encapsulation of why I love this character above all other things.
The name of the episode was Divided We Fall.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, all good stuff. Like that Justice League animated show is just top notch, top to bottom. It's the best representation of the DCU.
The Tim Diniverse, as I like to call it, there are no weak links to me.
None.
So,
agreed.
That's, yeah. You know,
But this, but that'll give you a new appreciation for Flash.
I have an alternative.
Oh.
The only other one I can point to is Neil Patrick Harris as the Flash in the New Frontier film.
Great pick.
Oh, yeah.
Great
yeah.
pick.
And that's Barry to me. It kind of reinforces the way that character was written and drawn in Darwin's original classic New Frontier comic. Think they nailed it on the somewhat flawed film adaptation. Not perfect, but it's still pretty good to me. But Neil brings a lot of charm to the always late Barry Allen, but the always selfless Flash.
And man, what a great pick. Neil Patrick Harris is a pretty tremendous voice actor. He's also
my favorite animated Nightwing.
Yep. I was just about to mention that he is, he plays Nightwing in Batman Under the Red Hood, which is a tremendous animated Batman film if anybody's never seen it. But moving on back to the Flash, we're about to get into some difficult questions now. Probably the two most difficult questions that anybody could ask you of the Flash: who are his greatest creators? And Ben, I think I'd like to start with you on this one. Who in your mind is the best Flash writer? And if you can follow that, and then follow that with who do you think drew the Flash the best? Who is his best artist? And these don't necessarily have to be writer-artist combos who work together. They could absolutely be at completely different eras.
So if you've been listening to the show so far, and if you haven't, that's weird. you probably expect this to be, for Ryder, a two-horse race, and to me it is. I think that maybe the third outside possibility would be John Broome, just because to me he's the definitive Barry Allen rider, but it's kind of unfair to compare a Silver Age rider working in the constraints that he did to modern era riders. It really comes down to Wade and Johns. They are the guys who have put the Flash on the map. And what I think you ultimately have to weigh out is the larger universe contributions. And in my mind, Russell, you can pick either guy, and there's no wrong answer here. Both Mark Wade and Jeff Johns had incredible runs on the Flash that added so much to the character. What Jeff has going for him, I think, is what he did for the Rogues and what he did, like you said earlier, in kind of transforming Barry Allen into a viable character. So there's a lot there. The reason, personally, I'll always go with Mark Wade is because Wally's my favorite Flash. Wally's my favorite character in all of comics. And no one did more for Wally West than Mark Wade. He transformed him fully from a successor to a hero in his own right. He gave him one of the greatest romances in the history of comics. He built up an incredible supporting cast. He created the concept of the Speed Force. That wasn't a thing until Mark Wade came along.
Sure.
And obviously that would be used by multiple writers and multiple mediums later on. He really dug into the character. And the other thing I'll add is just like a kicker for what Mark Wade did is he created Bart Allen. So Impulse, Kid Flash, The Flash, that's a Mark Wade creation. And he also, before Jeff did it to me, made Barry an interesting character. With the return of Barry Allen, with the life story of Barry Allen, which is a tremendous original graphic novel where it's
beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, it's Iris West, Allen retelling the story of Barry Allen start to finish, and it will make you fall in love with Barry, with Iris, and with their relationship. It's incredible. And then the stuff Mark did on some of the more underrated books he did, like JLA Year One, Brave and the Bold, Flash and Green Lantern. Really, there's a moment in JLA Year One where the Justice League is basically about to disband because they can't trust each other, and Barry takes a beat and then takes off his mask. It's a beautiful Barry Allen moment. It's the type of stuff Mark Wade did perfectly. So again, you're right either way you go here. Johns and Wade are both excellent choices. I'll always have a little bit of favoritism towards Wade just because I think he, for all that Jeff did for Wally, most of the heavy lifting on Wally was done before he ever got there. And I just think the contributions to the mythology that Mark Wade made are kind of unmatched.
Strong points all the way around. And it's going to be hard to make an argument otherwise. But before we move on there, Ben, you have to tell us your favorite Flash artist.
So this is where I jump to the Johns run, because to me, the best Flash artist of all time, you already mentioned him, is Scott Collins. Scott Collins is incredible. The energy, the dynamism he brought to the character, and the way he portrayed Speed, really going the extra mile to draw different phases of Wally running, the way he could do high-speed battles like Flash against Zoom, the character that he gave to Keystone and Central City, the work he did on the supporting cast, and the like no villain looked underrepresented when Scott Collins was drawing them. Scott Collins, one of my favorite artists of all time, period, but I don't think he was ever better than when he was on The Flash, and he, to me, is head and shoulders above all the other Flash artists.
That is strong words. Strong pick, too, because Scott Collins is certainly got to be in that running of greatest Flash artists. But before I get to my picks, Greg, let's go to you next. Who is the greatest Flash writer, and then who is the greatest Flash artist?
Well, with Ryder, I totally agree with Ben that it's a two-horse race in this one. There's a lot – certainly, I don't want to – and maybe we'll get to this if we have a little bit of time later. Some of the other great Flash creators over the years, guys like Bill Messner-Lebs, even Mike Baron, who had a somewhat controversial run on the Flash, I think certainly made some lasting contributions. But for me, it's either Wade or it's Johns, and it simply, for me, comes down to which one do I have the most exposure to. And – I have only read maybe three or four Mark Waid Flash story arcs. I've read The Return of Barry Allen. I've read Terminal Velocity. I've read, I believe, Born to Run. And so I have to go with Geoff Johns here because I have read virtually his entire Flash run. There's one, the third omnibus I have not read, but I have read the first two Johns on Wally omnibuses, and I've read everything he's written with Barry Allen. And to me, Geoff Johns sort of defines the Flash's world for me. All the versions of the characters, most of the versions of the characters that we know from the TV show draw heavy inspiration from his takes on these characters, whether it's Captain Cold, whether it's, Mirror Master, anywhere, any of the characters pretty much that we see seem to be influenced, even the Central City PD and everything. And what I love about Johns is he has all that great Wally writing, and he also has some great Barry writing under his thumb. He did, to Ben's point earlier, he redefined Barry for the modern era. I certainly don't think that the Grant Gustin Flash would have the personality that he does had it not been for Geoff Johns kind of revamping Barry and, to be fair, shifting some elements of Wally's personality onto Barry, but doing so in a way – doing so in a way that, to me, still leaves them as distinct characters, still leaves them as distinct personalities, but both of them interesting. And I think Johns had a very clever way of doing that and wrote my favorite Flash story, of course, which is Blitz, wrote a Wally West who had matured through the work of Mark Waid over the course of a decade into – almost the exact opposite of what he started as. He truly grew from this impetuous youth into this family man who valued his family and his friends more than himself. And you see that in his sacrifices and stories like Infinite Crisis. And the thing that Johns did also that has been mentioned is world building. I'm always a sucker for writers that do this incredible world building. And Keystone City is, to me, one of the most vividly defined comic book cities now in my brain as a result of reading the Geoff Johns Flash. This industrial sort of Detroit, a kind of motor city almost, of Keystone City. He went out of his way to infuse elements of life in this the same way that the best Batman writers have infused Gotham with life, or the best Superman writers have infused Metropolis with its own identity. This working class identity, and the rogues that inhabit it have never been better in any of the Flash stories I've read. He has I forget the issues and all that, the issue number, but he did the best Captain Cold story that there's ever been, right? There's an issue early in his Flash run where it's kind of all about Captain Cold, and it redefines that character for the modern era as not this sort of one note villain, but this guy that has his own distinct code of ethics and his supporting cast as well. So he redefined Captain Cold in the same way that he redefined a character like Sinestro on Green Lantern. And so for me, Johns is the pick on writer, and on artist, it's really hard for me to pick against Scott Collins, because I think of some of those panels of him with Hunter Zolomon in particular, and just the anger and the emotion on his face when he's confronting Wally. But I got to go a little more recent to pick the guy that I think is my favorite Flash artist, and that is somebody that Russell's brought up already, Francis Manapul. Francis Manapul's art on the Flash is some of the best I've ever seen in a superhero comic. It's so... Ben used the word dynamic earlier. It is dynamic. The way that I've never seen an artist that can illustrate speed in such a kinetic and believable way as what we see from Francis Manapul. He never loses the emotion in his pages. He never loses the storytelling in his pages. It uses some incredible creative page layouts as well. But it's that sense of speed. It's that sense of perpetual motion. It's that sense of setting the Flash apart from every other character in the universe, even Superman, setting him apart from everybody else in how his world operates, that kind of makes Francis my top pick. So those are my guys, Geoff Johns and Francis Manapul, respectively.
Hard to argue there, because...
Go ahead, Russell. I'll be last. It's all good.
Okay. I will let Todd go last, because, Greg, that's my painting. You've named off all the stuff about Geoff Johns and Francis Manapul, who are definitely my picks as well for just the greatest of all time on Flash. But the reason I picked Geoff Johns, just to add a little bit more there, is because Geoff Johns, unlike Mark Waid, is the one who has like actual runs on the Flash with both characters. Waid spent the vast majority of his time on Wally West and wrote Barry Allen here and there, and kind of, sort of, not Barry Allen at one point. But I don't want to spoil a 20-something-year-old comic by now for somebody who hasn't read it yet. But if you get into a certain story that's been mentioned on this podcast, you'll see what I'm talking about. Geoff Johns not only took what had been established by Mark Waid and kept it going and built up, continued the building of Wally West and really like continuing that character in a way that was very recognizable to everyone, he redefined the world around Wally West. And unlike like Waid's approach is good, Waid's approach is even great, but I would say that Geoff Johns took that rogues gallery and really built it out and expanded it in a way that that Waid did not, because Waid was far more concentrated on Wally West as the character, as the guy who was the focus of his attention. And Geoff jumped into this idea of, as Greg said, making the rogues and making the rogues gallery that Wally had the point of the story. Like, even though typically your hero would be your POV character, there are times whenever it feels like the villains are the POV character. The issue that Greg alluded to about Captain Cold, which is in The Flash number 182 from 2002, also drawn by Scott Collins. Great example of what Geoff Johns does best. He takes these villains and gives them real motivation, something that's more than just... I want to steal stuff and get rich. It's not the mustache twirling villains anymore. These are villains who are multifaceted, have tons of depth and dimension. And of course the heft that they get from an artist, on the level of Scott Collins is just second to none. You're not going to find, I think, a better example of somebody who just gets how to craft a story that will keep you engaged and keep you moving at such a great pace. And that is something that Johns does tremendously well in his 2010 run, where he worked with my favorite Flash artist of all time, Francis Manapul, starting with Dastardly Deaths of the Rogues and then moving on to The Road to Flashpoint, which gave way to Francis Manapul's really good run on The Flash as a co-writer and artist in the New 52. It's a very underrated run, I think. I think it's one that needs a lot more love and attention. Gets overshadowed a bit by Scott Snyder's Batman, which is running at the same time. But when you start talking about Flash artists, we've mentioned Scott Collins. Of course, we've talked about Francis Manapul. There are tons of others out there who have contributed to Flash's great legacy. One other artist that Geoff Johns worked with on The Flash, and one who is actually currently working on The Flash with Josh Williamson, Howard Porter, deserves a lot of love for his contributions to Flash. He is a outstanding artist for this character, and while he was real good on his initial Geoff Johns Flash run, I would say that he is even better on what he's doing right now with Josh Williamson. It is some of the best Flash art that I have, that I think has ever been committed to page. It is absolutely tremendous stuff. And I'd be remiss if I did not mention an artist who drew a, it was more of a DC Universe event book than it was just a specific Flash story, but Barry Allen is the main character. And that's Andy Kubert on Flashpoint. Andy Kubert killed it on that story. It is one of the just most mind-blowingly good representation of Barry Allen and the Flash's power set that you'll ever see. It is an absolutely gorgeous book. Regardless of your feelings on whether or not you like what Flashpoint does to the DCU, it's a damn good-looking book. And Andy Kubert is the sole reason that book looks just as gorgeous as it does. It is some of the best art on any character of any time. And there are several other Flash artists who have certainly thrown out some big contributions. Of course, we can't go without mentioning Carmine Infantino, who like really redefined the character, or fully defined the character as we know him. So just lots of good stuff out there, but I think that you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody who did it better than Francis Manapul. As Greg said, his attention to detail, making it feel like you're moving at super speed as you're reading it, like you're right there with the character. That's what you want in this kind of story, and that's what you want for whenever you're reading something, anything by the Flash. I really hope one day Francis Manapul gets a chance to draw some Wally West, because he did a killer job with Barry Allen. But all that said, those are my picks, and it's time for Todd to lay down the law and tell us all that we're wrong.
You guys are wrong.
There it is.
Well, all right. So, going to bring this home. It is a two-horse race as far as writers go. It's Wade or Johns. Great Flash writers over the years. John Broom, Kerry Bates, I can think of. All the different guys who wrote JLA over the years. Jerry Conway, Steve Englehart. A lot of those Silver Age guys. But the main people I relate to or think of when I think of the Flash are Mark Waid, Geoff Johns. Mark Waid, a guy who, when he was writing writing Wally, taking over, you know, in that Born to Run storyline, he was in his 30s, so he was a little older. So I think, well, he's writing about this character that's younger than him. But also, Mark Waid was Mr. Silver Age. He was the guy that grew up in the Silver Age and read those characters and related to the Teen Titans as characters. So, you know, I can see him writing himself as Wally West, coming up and finding himself, defining the character here in the early to mid-90s, late 90s as he went. Geoff Johns is a guy who was the age of Wally West as he was writing him, creating him. He didn't create the character, but, you know, creating these stories. So, you know, I can see the strengths of both of them. Mark Waid did a lot to develop Wally as a man, as a hero, and not necessarily the rogues around him, but his relationship with Linda Park, the relationship with him eventually being a father. All these things, and you know, Mark did the work with the kids down the road that we won't talk about. But as far as coming into his own, excuse me, there were a couple characters that DC readers of the 90s who were in their 20s, like me. Oh, shoot. Sorry. I tried to hit the mute button and did not. Sorry about that. Latched onto Jack Knight, Starman, Wally West, Flash, Kyle Rayner, Green Lantern, Dick Grayson, Nightwing. We all kind of glommed onto those characters and said, that's us on the page. Wally West being written by Mark Waid was one of them. I'm going to go with Waid over Johns, even though Johns was extremely consistent, developed the rogues, further pushed the relationship between Wally and Linda, which is still, like Ben alludes to often, the greatest romance in comics. I'm going to still give the nod to Mark Waid just because all the legwork he did, all the groundwork he did to build the character into who he became. Also, he worked on Barry, like Ben reminded me, with the life story of the Flash, but also the Brave and the Bold series, JLA Year One. Also worked on Wally as a member of the Justice League in the Tower of Babel storyline. Great work there too that we forget about often. So I'm gonna give the nod to Mark Waid, even though there were some lowlights, like when he came back to the character and drew the Awful Kid or wrote the Awful Kids, and the two words that no Flash reader should ever think about again. But I'm gonna remind you, Cobalt Blue, Mark Waid story.
Oh, so Todd had to throw a little bit of shade in there too, but I approve.
So, but I'm still gonna give the nod to Mark Waid. As far as artists, that might be a little harder, huh? There are some good choices out there. Scott Collins is who you think of when you think of Geoff Johns' Flash and the Zoom storyline and all those Rogue storylines. That was Scott Collins, and dude was extremely consistent, very timely, and was on the book for a long time. You think of Greg LaRocque, who did a great job with the artist or with the art on the character. You also think of artists like George Perez, who drew him in Justice League and Crisis on Infinite Earths. You think of Howard Porter, who drew him in more of these later issues of The Flash, as well as the Grant Morrison and Mark Waid era Justice League stories. But I'm going to mention somebody, or I'm going to give my vote to someone who we haven't spoken about, and that is the late, great Mike Waringo, who many of us have forgotten about. He is who I associate with the Mark Waid Flash. And he did a lot of covers. He did a lot of stories of the Flash. He was a guy who did a lot of thick art on them. He gave the characters kind of this unique look, maybe a little cartoony, but Mike Waringo, who went on to do Fantastic Four with Mark Waid over at Marvel, worked with Mark Waid first on The Flash. And that's going to be my pick. I loved the look that he brought to The Flash. He kind of did the visual creation for Impulse as well. Bart Allen, Max Mercury, he did a lot of work on, even though I think Max came back earlier on. So Ringo, as I like to call him, the late great artist who we don't talk about too much these days, but at the time he was really turning a lot of heads. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on Mike Waringo as far as a Flash artist.
Like, I'm somewhat familiar with his art. I would certainly recognize it if I saw it, and I would say that that is certainly a very strong pick, and I don't have anything negative to say about it. I'd say that that's certainly one that slipped my mind, unfortunately, but great pick all the way around, and one that I think would certainly make some new fans if they set their eyes on it.
Yeah, and one other guy that I want to mention, certainly not in the same, he's not the same pantheon as Ringo or as LaRocque or as Scott Collins or these guys, but did, I think, do a serviceable and good job on The Flash, and that was Butch Guice back in the post-crisis relaunch of The Flash. I actually, a few years ago, several years ago at this point, bought a box containing the first, I think, 150 or 200 issues of The Flash, and from that run. And so I started reading them, and I read probably the first 10 issues of Mike Barron's Flash, and thought the art was good. Butch Guice, certainly not the distinctive artist that we would go to know later on, but he certainly had a task ahead of him of defining a grown-up Wally West as the Flash, and I thought did a pretty good job in what's a really interesting interesting run of comics from Mike Barron, a wild and crazy and at times baffling series of comics, but there's some great stuff in there. I mean,
Chunk, Kilgore,
yes, Kilgore.
Capitalist Couriers, whatever they were, the Russian
Vandal,
Flash.
Though. Vandal Savage as a wizard, for reasons that are unexplained. He just shows up with magical powers and wearing a cape, and fights Wally, and Wally wins the lottery, and then loses all of his money after winning the lottery. So there's a lot of crazy off the wall ideas, but it's also some really entertaining comics.
another guy who was kind of a blip on the radar, like didn't have the long run that some of these other people did, but to me fits more into the Waringo mold, Todd, would be Humberto Ramos.
Yeah, I think of him with Impulse more.
Probably better known for his Impulse work, but did have a brief run on Flash with Wade that really did a lot of heavy lifting as far as defining the way people portrayed super speed. But yeah, really made his mark on Impulse.
All right. That's all of these picks have been great. I think we've given everybody a chance to pick what, like a different style, like we've talked about the varying types of Flash, our favorite writers, artists, stories. So we would love to get some feedback, of course, from the audience, from anyone who's listening to this episode. You know, you can tweet us right on the post in the Facebook comics group, the Place to Be Nation Comics Facebook group. Join that. Look for this post. Well, of course, if you're listening to this, find this post in there. Tell us your favorite Flash stories. Tell us if you discovered something that you never had while listening to this, and you've gone out and read it, and maybe tell us your thoughts on it. Did you love it? Did you hate it? Just give us any kind of feedback that you would like to throw out there. We love engagement. We love talking to all the fans, all the people that that listen to these shows. So before we get out of here, of course, we want to give our guests a big thank you to Greg and to Ben for joining us for this episode. Couldn't have done it without either of you guys. So what we'd like to do is give you a chance to plug your stuff. So tell us where can we find you on the old social media machines, and what other shows have you got there out in the Place to Be Nation Pop Pantheon or otherwise? And yeah, just plug your shit, as Nick Duke likes to say on the old Marvel Age podcast. So Greg, you are up first.
Well, of course, I can be found on every week here at Place to Be Nation on the Hard Traveling Fanboys, the longest running, et cetera, et cetera. I don't even know what we're doing at this point, but we're rolling along, putting out new content every single week. Not necessarily good content, but content nonetheless. And we're nothing if not consistently inconsistent. And on top of that, I have, alongside Tim Capel and Jennifer Smith, I have Talkin' WCW, which is a monthly retrospective on the typically on the career of an individual WCW, that's World Championship Wrestling for you non-wrestling people, performer. In the past, we've done episodes about Ric Flair, about Dusty Rhodes, about Dustin Rhodes. But we've recently expanded to include even match types like the War Games match. It's a really fun podcast. If you're a fan of wrestling, I think you'll enjoy it. And I think that's, unless I'm missing something, I think that's all I've got as far as podcasts. And if people want to reach out to me, they can follow me on Twitter. I am at gphillips8652. And I usually tweet about wrestling, comic books, and assorted shenanigans and malarkey. And then on Facebook, they can join the Place to Be Nation Comics Facebook page. We love to have new people join there and join the conversations about all the great shows here at Place to Be Nation Pop.
Greg,
sir,
what's the significance of 8652?
There literally is no significance. So the story of that is that basically 8652 was my assigned email when I went to college. There were that many G Phillipses apparently, and I was given the email address of gphillips8652@troy.edu. Don't bother emailing that; it doesn't exist anymore. But I just stuck with it because I couldn't come up with another naming convention for Twitter at the time. So that's just what I went with. There's no cool significance, unfortunately.
I would be very curious to know if someone would like to try and use that as the last four of his social and tell us what kind of results you get.
You're welcome to try. You're welcome to try.
Give that a shot. I am curious if that has been Greg's way of hiding in plain sight. Here it is, folks. You only see if you use this and it works. Ben.
And if it actually gets you any net benefit, if it does work.
Yes, if it does, then send at least a 30% residual to Greg for giving you the numbers.
Yes.
Now, Ben, it's your turn to plug your stuff. Tell us where we can find you on social media and what else you doing here at Place to Be Nation Pop.
social media, you can find me Ben J. Morse on Twitter, and probably more relevant to comics fans over at BenMorse882 on Instagram. I try to do at least 1 to 2 posts daily about comics, if not more than that. So that's a good place to engage with me. Definitely love communicating and talking to anyone who's listening to these shows. And of course, the primary place you'll find me on Place to Be Nation would be Marvel Age Masterclass, the companion show to Marvel Age that is looking at the history of Marvel Comics year by year, issue by issue, painful slog by painful slog, and sometimes good stuff too.
Yeah, we try to give you good material, but you know, some of these years, they're a little rough.
These 1970s and 60s creators are just not cooperating.
They hit it out of the park sometimes, but then most of the time it's like, oh God, oh, what are we doing? Makes me thankful for some of the modern DC stuff that that we jump into for this show. But I always appreciate Ben's post because every day there's a new Marvel comic that he's read and a new DC comic that he's read. So he's giving equal amount of love to both companies and
good insights.
Yes, and good always and, some valuable insight there. Something fun for whatever your taste may be.
It's always a high quality screenshot of, you know, Neil Adams or Dick Dillon art or somebody like that. It's always good stuff. So I particularly like his Instagram feed.
Yeah, I'm
thanks. Appreciate it.
I am a fan of the Instagram feed. Love the stories that you post up. It always goes comics, wrestling, comics.
Yeah, pretty.
And then he'll cap it off with a picture of him working out. So if you don't mind that, yeah, then you can.
If you follow his Instagram, you don't have to deal with as many of his terrible Hal Jordan takes.
Oh, no, yeah. I try to keep that on Twitter.
Well, Ben, don't take it personally, but that's why you're not being invited back for the Green Lantern Rebirth 15th anniversary.
Yeah. Fun fact, when Green Lantern Rebirth came out, I did the director's commentary for Wizard Magazine. I did it with Jeff Johns and Ethan Van Sciver, and it was my first big article for Wizard. And I never hit the record button on my tape recorder.
Oh.
So I had to go back. There. I had to go back and redo the whole thing. And the way I sold it to him was Pete Tomasi, who's now the writer on Detective Comics, was the editor of Green Lantern at the time. And I said, guys, let's do it all over again, but let's invite Pete so it's completely different. And it came out okay.
Well,
that's cool.
Some disaster.
Could have gone a lot worse with certain individuals involved there.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, no comment.
Well, we've gone this whole show without mentioning him, and I guess it was inevitable. But there it is. And, of course, you can find me and Todd on social media as well. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram using the same handle, Russell_Sellers. Love talking comics. You'll get a lot of comics retweets. I'm usually retweeting all of these guys because they have much more insightful things to say and think than I do. So I always defer to people who said it better, and I think that's a good philosophy for life.
So, you know, that's not entirely true. You have good tweets once in a while, and yeah, you know, you sell yourself short, Russell Sellers, who can be found on Twitter at Russell Sellers.
No, Russell_Sellers.
Russell_Sellers.
Todd doesn't know my handle.
Underscore.
No. And you can find me at Todd Weber Guitar, also on Twitter. Just follow us on Twitter, follow us on Instagram, follow Place to Be Nation Comics on Facebook. We appreciate your listening to DC for You. That's about all we have for the Flash Month. What a great collection of stories, characters, artists, so much great stuff as far as the Flash goes, even multimedia, even movie, well, not movies, but TV, lots of great stuff.
Maybe one day good movies.
We can hope.
We're crossing our fingers for that one, but there's more to come with Flash Month. We got two more episodes this month that are going to be completely dedicated to the Flash. And some of that stuff that we're going to be covering has already been alluded to in this episode. So,
Cobalt Blue.
Oh, Todd wishes we'd do that. But no, we're not doing Cobalt Blue. We are going to be taking a look at that classic Flash issue, The Flash of Two Worlds. And we're also going to be taking a look at the other Flash television show, the first foray, if you will, into the realm of live action for the Flash, and that was the 1990 John Wesley Shipp show. We're going to be taking a look at the pilot episode for that, all coming up to you in the coming weeks here in September. So with that, guys, thank you for joining us for another episode of DC4U. We will see
you. Thanks for our guests.
And yes, absolutely. Again, thanks to Greg and Ben. Go listen to both of their shows. It's good stuff. HTF on every single week. Marvel Age Masterclass following every episode of the Marvel Age podcast, which Todd and I are also both a part of, along with our buddies Tim Capel and Nick Duke. Make sure you go and subscribe to both feeds, Pop Feed and Wrestling Feed. Thank you again for listening to DC4U, and we will see you next time.
DC for you.